Good morning, everyone. It's good to be with you. And we do have, I know, several visitors here, and we're especially glad that you are present with us. Some of you, I think, may be here for the very first time. And again, we invite you to fill out that visitor's card, and we'd love to be able to talk with you for a few minutes after services. But really, really good to have you here. If you've ever taken any kind of speech class, a speech teacher, if he's worth his salt, will tell you, don't ever start a speech by rattling off a bunch of statistics. It's just boring. My goodness, you'll lose your audience. And for that reason, I want to start this morning by giving you some statistics. At the risk of losing the audience, let me give you some stats here, if I may. 61% of adults in the U.S. drink alcohol each year. 33% of U.S. adults had five or more drinks on at least one day in the past year. 14 million Americans, that's 7.4% of the entire population, are diagnosed alcoholics or alcohol abusers. 14 million. Let me give you some more. The highest prevalence of binge and heavy drinking is young adults between the ages of 18 and 25, with the peak rate at 21. 3 million U.S. citizens older than 60 abuse alcohol or require it to function normally. We're not just talking about a problem that affects those who are young. Over 50% of American adults have a close family member who is an alcoholic. Over 50% are that touched by the problem of alcohol abuse. In 2005, alcohol dependence cost the United States approximately $220 billion. That was greater than the amount of money spent to combat cancer, which in 2005 was $199 billion. Does that stat surprise you? The more education a person has, the more likely they are to drink. Sometimes people think it would be just the opposite. No, the more educated you are, the more likely you are to be a drinker of alcohol. The wealthier a person is, the more likely that person is to drink. Or consider this. More than 100,000 deaths each year in the United States alone are caused by excessive alcohol consumption. Do you think we have a problem here in our country with all this? Nearly half of all fatal car crashes are alcohol-related. 40% of alcoholism is passed down through the gene pool, while the other 60% stems from unknown sources. And then let me give you just a few more. Every day, an average of 11,318 teenagers try alcohol for the first time. Every day. 6.6 million children under 18 live in households with at least one alcoholic parent. 6.6 million. 80% of all high school seniors have used alcohol. 62% of high school seniors have been drunk. 500,000 American children between the ages of 9 to 12 are addicted to alcohol. Do those stats surprise you? Those are the facts. And they're not disputed. Proverbs 23, verses 29 to 35 says this. Who has woe? Who has sorrow? Who has contentions? Who has complaining? Who has wounds without cause? Who has redness of eyes? Those who linger long over wine. Those who go to taste mixed wine. Do not look on the wine when it is red, when it sparkles in the cup, when it goes down smoothly. At the last, it bites like a serpent and stings like a viper. I want to talk to you this morning a little bit about the problem of social drinking that we have in our country and that we have even among those who are Christians. And I want us to appreciate what is said in passages like this in the book of Proverbs that give just tremendously strong warnings about alcohol consumption and the abuse of it and how deceptive it can be and what a common problem it has always been throughout the generations for those people who are drinkers of alcohol and abuse alcohol to be convinced that it's not really a problem. It's not something that they need to be worried about. In fact, the alcohol, that alcoholic beverage is so pleasant and so pleasing and seems so good and seems so innocent. And yet, as the wise man says here, at the very end, it's going to bite you like a serpent. And you were there playing with it. We have a lot of people in our day who say there's nothing at all wrong with social drinking. That's a very common affirmation that a lot of people make. And a lot of Christians make that kind of statement. And the reason why they make that kind of statement is because of this. They will say, well, the Bible doesn't condemn all consumption of alcohol. And what they mean by that is that there are Bible passages that speak about alcohol as or in a positive way, or the drinking of wine in a positive way. And so the Bible, it is very commonly argued, does not condemn all consumption of alcohol. And I want to say to you at the outset that that's a true statement. It certainly is true. In fact, I think it would be wrong for me to try to deal with this subject and frankly handle it the way I've seen some preachers with good motives handle it, where they try to somehow argue that, no, the Bible is condemning any and every consumption of alcohol or any kind of intake of a fermented beverage to any and all extent. It's inherently sinful. That's not what the Bible says, and I'm not here to affirm that to you. There are passages that do speak positively of wine, for example. It would be wrong for me to imply otherwise. In Psalm 104 and verse 15, for example, in a context where the psalmist is talking about all the various gifts of God in the natural world, he says, among those is wine which makes man's heart glad and food which sustains man's heart. There are other passages that also speak positively of wine. In Ecclesiastes 9 and verse 7, the wise sage says, eat your bread in happiness and drink your wine with a cheerful heart, for God has already approved your works. And of course, everyone is aware of the fact that Jesus' first miracle, according to John chapter 2, verses 1 through 11, was the turning of the water to wine. And again, I have known of some who have, with good motives, tried to argue that the miracle that John 2 is talking about is Jesus turning this into what we might call grape juice and an unfermented fruit of the vine. And I want to say to you here up front, that's not true. And I don't want anyone to misunderstand that. And I am saying to you that, no, the Bible does not condemn all kinds or any and every kind of consumption of alcohol. That's not true. However, for us to just stop there is a gross mistake. Wine in Bible times was not like wine and alcoholic beverages that we have today. It's apples and oranges. Archaeologists have discovered a lot of wine presses like this just all over Palestine, all over the ancient world. We know very well that the consumption of wine was a table beverage in that ancient world. In fact, very often it was the case that due to the problem of water supply and having a fresh supply of water, unstagnated water, that was all the more reason for wine to be the standard table beverage. And so, yes, wine in Bible times was fermented. And I've had some people who tried to argue that, no, those Bible passages I've just pointed out to you, they're just talking about grape juice. That's not true. No, there was a measure of fermentation, very definitely, in biblical wines. And we know how it was produced, and there's just no question about that. But ancient alcohol was not equivalent to modern alcohol. And here's the point that I think we desperately need to understand in our society, and that Christians need to understand. As they go to Bible passages that talk positively about wine and then make the application, oh, that means that there's no problem at all with social drinking and modern day intake of modern alcoholic beverages. Ancient alcohol, the fact of the matter is, was not equivalent to modern alcohol. In fact, ancient alcohol, ancient wines were always served highly diluted, highly cut with water. Let me just give you, I'll give you one ancient passage. There are many that we could go to. And this is all undisputed, what I'm talking about, undisputed by historians. In 2 Maccabees chapter 15 and verse 39, the author of this document comes to the end and he says, "So I will hear in my story, if it is well told and to the point, that is what I myself desired. If it is poorly done and mediocre, that was the best I could do. For just as it is harmful to drink wine alone, or again to drink water alone, while wine mixed with water is sweet and delicious and enhances one's enjoyment, so also the style of the story delights the ears of those who read the work." Again, it was absolutely known that wine as a table beverage, like these biblical passages are referring to it, wine was always diluted with water. Ancient wines were greatly diluted. In fact, the customary ratio, Greek writers talk about this, was 3 parts water to every 1 part wine. A 3-to-1 ratio. And what a lot of people are not aware of or don't think about is that today's alcohol has a much higher concentration of alcohol in it, all due to the distillation process that was developed in the Arab world around AD 700. And then in Europe, this whole process of distillation that is just taken for granted in our society, that all began around AD 1100. And so what you have is a process of distillation that artificially increases the amount of fermented content, the amount of alcohol in a particular beverage. That's what distillation is. And that is something that was not known in Bible times, but that is something that we have in our day. And so as a result, we have alcoholic beverages in our day that have a much higher percentage of alcoholic content than the alcoholic beverages, the wine that was being used as a table beverage in Bible times. In fact, Robert Stein has made this point that I think is a very good point I want to give to you. He puts it in a very graphic way, but I think it's a good point. In his article, Wine Drinking in New Testament Times, he says, "To consume the amount of alcohol that is in two modern martinis by drinking wine containing 3 parts water to 1 part wine, like the ancients would dilute it, one would have to drink over 22 glasses. In other words, it is possible to become intoxicated from wine mixed with 3 parts of water, but one's drinking would probably affect the bladder long before it affected the mind." Now, that may be a little bit crudely put, but I think the point is well taken. And I don't want anyone to misunderstand. Certainly, even the Bible talks about how you could make strong drink, and there is that particular biblical terminology for strong drink. And yes, you could purposely not dilute that wine as a table beverage the way you normally would, so you would have a higher concentration of alcoholic content in the glasses that you were drinking. And so, yes, in the ancient world, you could make this into strong drink and therefore get drunk more easily. But that's, of course, what the Bible is condemning when it talks about those who run after strong drink or who linger long over the wine. But wine, as it was ordinarily served as a table beverage that was diluted with 3 parts water to every 1 part wine, had a low percentage of alcohol content, certainly not like the alcoholic beverages that we have in our day and time. Now, somebody asked the question, well, what about grape juice? When did that start? Well, it started in our country as a result of the work of, yes, Dr. Thomas Welch in 1869. This was after Pasteur had come up with the pasteurization process and all of that, the heating of liquids to destroy the bacteria and all of that. Well, Welch applied that process to wine in order to produce, for the first time in history, this kind of unfermented and unfermenting juice of the grape. And the reason why he did it, do you know why? It's because he saw so many of the Christians, in fact, even so many of the priests and the pastors who were becoming intoxicated when they would drink the wine of communion, the wine of the Lord's Supper. And he talked about how they've turned the fruit of the vine into the cup of devils, to use that biblical terminology. That's why he came up with this. And so that's what we're talking about with the grape juice, all produced by Dr. Thomas Welch in the late 19th century. So what we're seeing in all this is, I hope, a better understanding of what the Bible is talking about when it talks about wine and talks about it in those passages that view it favorably. Talking about modern social drinking and some mistakes, some errors that modern social drinkers make in their thinking. First of all, they mistakenly equate, as we've said, modern alcohol with the alcohol of Bible times. You know, we talk a lot in Bible classes about how you have to put passages in context. How many times do we discuss that? How many times do I emphasize that point? And we all understand that. Well, you know, you have to understand passages properly in their context before you can ever properly apply them. And we make a gross mistake if we just take a passage out of its historical context and just assume that what I'm doing in my modern day, well, that's exactly what the Bible was talking about. That certainly is not the case when we're talking about the drinking of wine. We're talking in our modern day about modern distilled alcoholic beverages, which are not of the same order as the kind of much lower fermentation, the naturally fermented kind of table wine beverage in Bible times. So it is a mistake to equate modern alcohol with the alcohol of Bible times. Also, modern social drinkers fool themselves about the amount of alcohol that they're consuming. It's a real easy mistake to make. And when you look at, say, a 5-fluid-ounce glass of wine, ordinary glass of wine, and maybe a 12-fluid-ounces of beer or a wine cooler, and okay, we all recognize that those two different kinds of modern alcoholic beverages, they have different percentages of alcohol in them. But the ordinary serving size is different. And so what you need to understand, and what people so often don't understand, is that there really is, even though the percentage of alcohol is different in between modern wine and, say, a modern-day beer, yet the average serving, there is approximately the same amount of alcohol that one is taking into his body. And what also we need to understand when we talk about hard liquor, or those alcoholic beverages that have a much higher level of alcoholic content, such as vodka or gin or scotch or bourbon or rum. And we have that smaller kind of shot glass, and so we say, well, okay, that has a lot higher percentage of alcohol than what I'm drinking. I'm just having a can of beer. And yet what we need to understand is, but the serving size is so much smaller. So the amount of alcohol that a person is consuming, whether he's drinking, say, a mixed drink of, say, 80-proof liquor, or whether it's a 5-fluid-ounce glass of wine or a 12-fluid-ounce glass of beer, it's all approximately the same amount of alcohol that one is ingesting. And so what happens is that people so often, they deceive themselves about the amount of alcohol that they are taking in. I'll give you another error that we see with modern social drinkers. They fail to consider sufficiently, the addictive nature of alcohol. It's just a real problem. And those statistics I showed you at the beginning of the lesson, that's why I showed them to you. Is there any wonder, given the kind of modern distilled alcoholic beverage where we are unnaturally increasing the alcoholic content from, say, the way it was in Bible times, is there any wonder that we have the problem of alcoholism at such high numbers in our modern society? Is there any wonder that we have households where over 50% have some family member who has an alcohol problem? Is there any wonder that you have children who have this kind of addiction problem growing up in households where dad drinks a beer every night? And what starts them on that path? Is there any wonder, any doubt about all of that? This is a major problem we have in our society. And people so often fail to consider that addictive nature of alcohol. And people ignore biblical warnings about drunkenness and what is associated with it. It amazes me how many people I talk with about the issue and the problem of social drinking, and they know very well passages like Psalm 104 or John 2 where Jesus turns the water to wine. They know those passages. Because those are those passages they're pointing to talk about, well, the Bible doesn't condemn all consumption of alcohol, and so, you know, so they use those to justify themselves. But what they don't know, I dare say, are the many more Bible passages that are condemning the abuse of this substance and are warning about it. Do we really appreciate what the Bible is warning us about? And it's warning people about the kind of alcoholic beverages in their day, which, as we've said, had a far less alcoholic content than the modern distilled beverages in our society. And yet they were still giving warnings like this. Isaiah 5, verse 11. Woe to those who rise early in the morning that they may pursue strong drink, who stay up late in the evening that wine may inflame them. Their banquets are accompanied by lyre and harp, by tambourine and flute, and by wine. But they do not pay attention to the deeds of the Lord. That's another one of the problems that we have with all of this, is that so often the setting where the kind of social drinking is going on at the bars or at the parties and all that, it's a setting where God and righteous behavior, that's the furthest thing from people's minds. And Isaiah was condemning that problem in his day, even when the kind of alcohol available to them was much less alcoholic content than our modern beverages. Or Galatians 5, verse 19. Do you think about this passage? Do you really think about it? Now the deeds of the flesh are evident, which are immorality, impurity, sensuality, idolatry, sorcery, enmities, strife, jealousy, outbursts of anger, disputes, dissensions, factions, envying. Pretty despicable list so far, isn't it? Drunkenness, carousing, and things like these, of which I forewarn you, just as I have forewarned you, that those who practice such things will not inherit the kingdom of God. People in our society view drunkenness as a problem, and very often, well, it's a joke. It's funny. Let's laugh at that person who's a drunk. Let's laugh at that person because he's inebriated. And isn't it funny what he's doing? The Bible's talking about as being a work of the flesh, and those people who engage in that will not inherit the kingdom of God. That's how God views it. Because when we allow ourselves and our minds, people who are made in the image of God as rational beings, to be in that sense like God, not like the animals, but in that sense like God, when we allow that chemical to then affect us and purposely just delude our thinking, we lose that sense of what the image of God is all about. And it's a despicable thing. So God lists it here as among those deeds of the flesh. And so often, again, what we need to appreciate is it's not just the problem of getting drunk. You know, we get into arguments like that. Well, you know, well, yeah, I mean, I wasn't drunk. Well, where's the line of drunkenness? Well, then we have debates about that, you know. But this passage isn't just talking about the drunkenness per se being wrong, but even other things associated with it. The term after drunkenness here, carousing. Or some of your versions may say parties. Well, I'll tell you what, the ancient Greek world, they use that terminology kind of like we do in our modern English. What do young people in college, when they talk about partying, what's that connote? Well, it connotes alcohol. Well, that's what the term is here. Drinking parties, those kinds of parties where it isn't a term that necessarily means people are getting drunk. And again, that's where a lot of people argue. Well, you know, as long as I don't get drunk, then this kind of social drinking is totally fine. That's not what this passage indicates. So often it's the setting itself where there are, maybe you're not getting drunk, but well, other people are. And it's a setting where the idea of over-drinking and abusing all of that, it's not an issue. It's not being people are not concerned about that. That's what Paul's talking about. It's that kind of a setting where people are more concerned about just their fleshly desires and all of that than they are about those things that are good and right. And so often people will argue about all this, and yet when you ask them and you talk about them, have you ever had an occasion where, yeah, you drank too much, even by your standard? And then they kind of hang their head and think, well, yeah. But you put yourself in that position. You put other people in that position. Again, we've got biblical passages like these that are warning about this. Again, the Proverbs 23 passage. What a powerful statement, just as true now as it was centuries ago. Don't look at the alcoholic beverage when it just sparkles in the cup. It just looks so inviting. You know who makes the best commercials? Best commercials. The beer companies. They're the funniest, they're the most well done, they got all the stars in them, and they just make it just seem like, I mean, this is the greatest thing in the world. And of course, they don't have people drinking beer, you know, have the beer bellies out to here, and the people who are falling down and drunk, and the people and the kids who've been brought up in homes where they've had some problem as a result of alcohol, or somebody who's been in a car crash and lost their life, or a loved one has lost their life because of alcohol. They don't show you all that in the commercials. Instead, they show all these youthful people with washboard abs, and they're just drinking away, and it's just a wonderful thing. There's no problem at all. That's exactly what the wise sage is saying. Don't look at it at that point. It just sparkles. It just seems like it goes down smoothly. It's going to bite you like a serpent in the end. And so often social drinkers in our modern day, they don't pay any attention to these Bible passages. Never read them. Never bring those up in the discussion. And then finally, what mistake do modern social drinkers make? How about this one? They give a poor example to other people. You know, the Bible does have a lot to say about that. There's a lot to say about that. That the things that you do, the things that I do, other people see us. And maybe you're not drinking to what you consider to be an excess, and so you've got your drinking of that beer a night or something. You think that's just fine and not a problem. But what about your kids, you see? Are they going to be able to handle that in as good a way as you say you can handle it? Are they going to, or if they grow up and they're one of those stats where they have the alcoholic problem, how are you going to feel then that you kind of just introduce them to that? Do you think about that? Or you could kind of then do what a lot of people do. Well, I'll just hide my drinking from them. Oh, that's a wonderful example, as if kids don't see through that one. And again, the people that we're with and that we are giving credence to as we drink, have you ever thought about, well, maybe my practice here, maybe I'm not having this excessive problem with this, but maybe the person who's with me, maybe they have more of a problem. And it's just a fact, as one stat that I showed you, there are some people who have more of a genetic predisposition toward alcoholism than others. Now, in ancient times, when you had naturally naturally fermented beverages. You didn't have the tremendous problem that we have now, where you've got this higher distillation, or rather the distillation process and higher level of alcohol, and now you've got people who genetically are more predisposed for alcoholism, and they live in this modern world of distilled beverages. It's more of a problem. And you're there, and you're engaging in this, and your example is really condoning this for somebody else, and you say, oh, well, I can handle all this. I think you're probably lying to yourself, but even if you aren't, even if it's true, can the person who's being influenced by you, can they handle it? And if they can't, don't you bear some measure of responsibility for that? Modern social drinkers don't think about all this. They just look at the alcohol in the glass when it sparkles and it just looks good. And I have a right to do this. And that's kind of the way it's viewed. What's wrong with social drinking? That's what I've been talking with you about this morning. And I tried to present this subject in a biblically accurate way. I've tried not to make some kind of arguments that are overstating the facts or saying something that's not true. I've tried to address this in a factual and accurate way. What's wrong with social drinking? There's a lot of things wrong with social drinking. And like so many of the issues that we deal in life with as Christians, there is judgment involved in all this, sure. And you know how a lot of people handle this whole idea of, well, there's judgment involved. It's kind of the way my kids would handle that whenever we'd have some issue, some biblical issue where I was telling them they can't do this, you know. And if they could ever get me to admit that there's an element of judgment in all that, they were like, woohoo, okay, if it's just a matter of judgment, then I can do whatever I want to. That's kind of the way young people think. You know, if you can't show me a Bible passage that thou shalt not do this, if there's any element of judgment, you know, okay, well then dad can't tell me I can't do it. Okay, yeah. That's how young people think. But the fact of the matter is that most moral issues and most issues about proper behavior, there's judgment involved. No, there's not just some Bible passage, just black and white, any and all instances, okay, this is the way it is. No, there is judgment involved in all that. But the fact that there's judgment involved doesn't give you license to just do whatever you want to do. What we ought to realize from that is God's going to hold us accountable for making those good judgments. And that's what the Bible's trying to get us to see. It applies to social drinking like it does everything else. So there's a lot of things wrong with this kind of social drinking in our modern day and time, in our modern alcoholic beverages. And I want us to think about that. And I want us to think about it very seriously. I appreciate you listening to me this morning. I hope I've challenged you. I hope I've made you a little bit uncomfortable, some of you, to really address some things in your life that maybe you're not addressing. And I'm not saying that like I'm trying to act like holier than thou or being unkind. Goodness, no. But this is a problem in our society. It's a huge problem. And it's a problem among the Lord's people also. And that's why we're talking about the way that we are this morning. Thank you so much for listening to me. I wonder if there's someone here this morning who needs to respond to the gospel of Jesus in some way. Can we help you? Can we assist you? Whatever be your need, let that be known, won't you, while together we stand and sing.